championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast show on any podcasting platform. Today, we are going to be talking about all the staffing changes that happened yesterday. It was quite a lot. It happened all at once. It's intense. It's very intense. Talk about the repercussions of making a move like that. Why each guy was let go or moved. What's going to happen in the interim, and who does Texas target next? After that, talk about Texas Tech, because that game still happened. Might have seemed like forever ago, but still happened. And afterwards, talk to Zach Barnett of Football Scoop to get the national perspective on what's going on at Texas. Darius, how was Thanksgiving weekend, man? You enjoy everything that happened? Football win and then some major changes?
Yeah, the Cowboys tried to mess that up on Thursday, but Texas looked like they were going to try to mess it up too, when the way they started that game Friday. All in all, no, it was a great week. Enjoyed seeing family, getting some time to recharge the batteries and get ready to get back at it.
Yeah, well, you got to get right back at it real, real fast, because everything that just happened. Tom Herman, as everybody who's probably listened to the show knows already, made some major changes on the staff by first letting go of Todd Orlando, which was a move that really did surprise me. Then letting go of Drew Mehringer, the wide receiver coach. Demoting Tim Beck from the official offensive coordinator position. Then moving Corby Meekins to a desk job, a quality control job. And that was it, right? That's it so far?
It's just four so far.
I don't know if it's going to be the end of it. It likely won't, especially since you got the coordinators will likely want to bring in some of their own guys. So we're probably not seeing the end of the axe here.
Well, hell, I still got a bowl game to play. They can't fire everybody.
Yeah, exactly. They gotta have somebody there.
to get them through. The season's not quite over yet.
But it is interesting, with Tom Herman making such a massive move this early on in his Texas career, and as many people have pointed out, you usually get this trump card, this total staff remake, once. And Tom Herman just used it.
You get to point the finger at everybody else and say somebody else's fault. You get to do it one time. Especially at a place like Texas. I was personally very, very surprised to see him move on from Todd Orlando, especially with that being the first thing that came out, became official. It was like, whoa, you know, if we're only going to make one move today, that's the move you make. But the guys on offense, you know, change was definitely needed on offense. You know, it was the guys we were hearing about. I was surprised, but pleasantly surprised, and I think it was necessary. I think it's a step in the right direction.
Right, I think for the past 3 years, this move with Mehringer and Tim Beck has been warranted. I remember the first year under Mehringer, the wide receiver were very underwhelming, and Tim Beck as a play calling coach lost his play calling role to Tom Herman around midway through the 2018 season. Tom Herman then had to deal with all of basically the play calling and offensive coordinator decision making throughout this past year, instead of doing what he needs to do as a head coach, which I don't know what that is, because I'm not a head coach of Texas football.
Well, if it's anything like, I mean, University of Texas, a place like that, he's got to handle everything. He's got a whole lot of other things to worry about. So when you add in an extra duty, like having to be the guy orchestrating those offensive meetings, being the brains behind the offense, on top of all the other responsibilities that come with being the head coach of University of Texas, both on the field and off the field, man, he's gonna drive himself crazy. He's wearing them thin. So no, he definitely, like you said, especially with Beck midway through last season, a change had to be made. He lost confidence and he can't trust Beck, you know, to be the guy to handle the offense. So, I think, it got to a point where, you know, he's got to get somebody in there that he can trust. And I think it's a home run being able to retain Beck as the quarterbacks coach. I hope that's something that lasts all the way through, even with the next OC hire, because he's a heck of a recruiter. I think he'd be a big asset in a lesser role.
Right, and I don't think he's going to get another big-time offensive coordinator role because of, you know, rough times in Nebraska and in Ohio State and now at Texas. He's had a rocky road of kind of falling upwards.
And he'll be one of the more highly paid quarterback coaches in the country.
Right. It was a move that seemed to need to be made with some major moves on the offensive side. But the defensive side, even though there were issues halfway through the season, kind of in the beginning of the season, it still is a little interesting that you move on from Todd Orlando. Now, I understand that Todd Orlando was likely moving towards being one of the statistically worst defenses in Texas history, but the move still caught me by surprise, seeing as how the team did get better as they got healthier. The fact that, you know, there is a legitimate reason behind some of the lack of success behind Todd Orlando's teams with, you know, having to replace 8 starters and then 8 more after injuries. I mean, it just didn't seem that long ago that he was up for head coaching jobs at other places and we were trying to hold on to him.
To speak to the defense improving during the last third of the season, over the final four games of Kansas State, Iowa State, Baylor, Texas Tech, Texas gave up an average of 23 points. To hold 4 Big 12 teams to an average of 23 points, you would think at a place like Texas with a guy like Sam Ellinger, a quarterback, with the weapons they have, you would think that that would be more than enough. That'd be enough to go 4-0. The truth is, the fact is, they went 2-2. They split that. And Texas is 7-5 right now. I mean, I think if they're 9-3, they win those two games, I think we're having a different conversation right now. If you would have told me 6 weeks ago that Todd Orlando would get fired at the end of this year, I still think I would have a hard time believing it. Because, I mean, he's been with them the whole time. He's been a head coach, right? He hadn't known anything besides Todd Orlando. And I went to Orlando's, not his defense, but I mentioned the stats about the improvement over the final part of the year. Quandre, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago, he commented, and I didn't have a rebuttal for it. He said, that's all true, but there's been a lack of player development on that side. And there's not a single person on the defense that comes to mind that I feel like took major strides from last season. I'm also kind of looking at Yancey McKnight a little bit too, with all the injuries, talking about development, you know, both skill wise and physically. I can't argue with the lack of the player development, and he wasn't much of a guy on the recruiting trail either. So,
if he's not
performing in those two phases and then you're still, you know, struggling, you know, giving up 48 points to Kansas, losing to Maryland 2 years in a row, looking like you have no idea what's going on in the first series of every game. Tom Herman's feet are to the fire. You know, he's coaching for his job next year. And he had to make something happen, and kudos to him for having the courage to make that move. But I was surprised he made it, definitely.
Right, and I'm surprised he made it and caused a lot of stormy waters for his next year, which could be a year which is make or break for Tom Herman in his time at Texas. Letting go of a guy like Todd Orlando, as you said, who he is so familiar with, and a team that probably, regardless of who is at coordinator, will be salty at defense. There's a lot of guys who are returning, a lot of talent returning. It is just a bundle of dudes who are dudes. They know how to play. They have so much talent on that side of the ball returning next year. I think Todd Orlando probably couldn't have failed.
And you know Herman's aware of all the injuries. You know he was aware of all the guys they were replacing. And you know he's aware that they only gave up an average of 23 points a game in the last month. So it makes me wonder if, you know, if he approached Orlando about a change in the way he does things up front. And, you know, maybe, I mean, you know, being in coaching myself, you know, a lot of guys, you know, that they make their career, they make their living doing things a certain way. They don't know another way. You know, they're afraid to change. And I wonder if he approached him maybe about changing the way he plays his front. Texas changed their front in the second half of that game against Texas Tech, and it made a difference. But I wonder if he approached him about that, and I wonder if he didn't feel like he wasn't comfortable with doing it. So Herman had to make a change. But I wonder if it was more to it than just, you know, being necessarily dissatisfied. Maybe Orlando wasn't willing to be flexible about the way they did things too.
Oh, I'm sure that that's what happened. I'm actually quite sure that that's what happened, is that Todd Orlando was just unwilling to change his defense to the personnel, on top of an inability to, you know, have some player development. The lack of fundamentals was something that we have been talking about all year long on defense. The lack of ability to tackle, the lack of fundamental tackling, the lack of fundamental understanding of a game plan. It's just been all these different fundamental parts of the defense. And we talked about it with Quandre Diggs, in fact, a guy who is all about fundamentals. That's been something that they've been lacking all year long. You're right. Player development has been something that has been very much lacking under this defensive staff. It's going to be interesting seeing what happens there. We'll talk about who Texas could possibly go after later on, but let's go ahead and move on to Tim Beck. Tim Beck, who I guess we already kind of talked about why the move needed to be made, because Tim Beck is not play calling. He's not doing his job as an offensive coordinator. The fact is that the end of the season was indicative of the Tim Beck era. And having a S&P plus offensive ranking of 38 is just not going to cut it in the Big 12 when you have a quarterback like Sam Ehlinger and an offensive line where three of the guys are seniors and one of them is a junior.
I've thought Texas has had games where I thought the play calling looked pretty decent to start. But I just feel like Texas never, whenever they had a plan going into a game, offensively, if something didn't work or something went off schedule or off the plan, I feel like they struggled with making adjustments. We know that Tom Herman is going to take over the play calling duties for the bowl game. We know he's been doing most of the work on that front for a while now. So not expecting a lot to change offensively during the bowl game. You know, moving forward though, hopefully since Beck is being retained right now as quarterback coach, who are you hearing about? What are you thinking as far as maybe who somebody Texas could bring in as his replacement?
I think long term you have two guys who you're looking at immediately. Joe Brady out of LSU and Graham Harrell. Joe Brady seems to be a bit of a pipe dream for Texas, and I don't really know how I feel about Texas getting Joe Brady, seeing as he really doesn't have any play calling experience, and on top of that, he's not done any recruiting. So we don't know how he is as a recruiter. We don't know really his
do they need Joe Brady to recruit when you see what his system, what happened? He's transformed a place like LSU, who's always had the athletes, always had the talent. What he does speaks for itself. You necessarily might not need him to recruit. That's why you still have a guy like Tim Beck there. You have a guy like Stan Drake. You have recruiters around. You see what I'm saying? And maybe they can mask that a little bit. But we've seen the names that were mentioned, Graham Harrell and Joe Brady. Joe Brady only made $410,000 this year. He's set to make, I believe, $440,000 next year and then $460,000 after that. The opportunity, I think, is there if Texas wanted to make this a game of who can be the highest bidder. I think there's something there. There's a possibility there with that as far as this contract.
And I agree. I do believe that coaches should be developers first and recruiters second. But as Nick Saban says, he is not the best coach. He's the best recruiter. And that just kind of points to what college football is. The lifeblood of college football is recruiting. So you need a guy who you know is a competent recruiter. That's one of the reasons that Todd Orlando is getting let go.
I just will argue right now, we're seeing LSU. LSU has always dominated getting the guys from the state of Louisiana, right? But we look up at their current recruiting class. They've got a guys like Raheem Jarrett, five-star wide receiver from Baltimore, Maryland. Jermaine Burton, five-star receiver from Calabasas, California. Guys across the country are seeing what's happening. And I promise you, Joe Brady's not out there recruiting them. Nothing's changed. They're seeing the product on the field. So I understand that being a concern. But Joe Brady will be a home run for Texas. Another guy that I don't know if the timing will work out, but if things don't work out with the Dallas Cowboys, what about a guy like Kellen Moore being the offensive coordinator?
You read my brother's mind,
like,
man.
Your brother? No, he's a college dude. He's what, 30 years old? He was at Boise. He was under Harsin, he's got some ties there. I feel like that makes a ton of sense, especially if the timing work out. Joe Brady, Kellen Moore.
And Graham Harrell is the last guy.
Go ahead and expand on Harrell.
Yeah, so Graham Harrell, the USC offensive coordinator right now, originally a high school coach up in, I believe it was Dallas, moved.
Yeah,
to,
he was at Ennis. Ennis,
right.
Guys.
And most Texas fans remember him in 2008 for breaking their hearts, costing Texas a shot at a national championship. Graham Harrell could very soon be an offensive coordinator for the Longhorns. He is a guy who a lot of Texas fans were calling for last year. If he does come to Texas, it would be an interesting hire for the Longhorns, and right now seems to be the most likely one based on his past and the instability around USC.
Yeah, here's my case why it makes sense. All of his family, like you mentioned, are all still here in Texas. Dad's a Texas high school legend. His brother's a coach now at the high school, at that high school at Ennis. Everybody's here. He got started at UNT. I don't know if you've seen many USC interviews this year, but I wonder how he's adapted. You know, he's a Texas guy, a little bit country, you know, country guy, how he's adapted to being out there in Los Angeles, you know, with those lights in his face, you know, 24/7 surrounded by concrete. I think it makes sense. And like you've mentioned, USC's got their own turmoil going on. That they've been talking about this job security for over 2 years now. It makes a lot of sense. And I feel like this is going to be the year where Texas finally, you know, we've always talked about, you know, whenever positions came open in Texas, Texas is going to always get the best guy, and usually doesn't end up happening. I think this will be the year fans are really excited about who gets brought in. It's a strong possibility of it right now with the guys available.
Right. And while we're on the topic of coordinators, there are a few names out there right now that we put out for your coordinators. We've reported in the past that a guy like the Washington defensive coordinator, Jimmy Lake, is a guy who Texas could go after. Maybe Auburn's Kevin Steele is another guy. But the name that seems to be hot right now seems to be Chris Ash and Utah's defensive coordinator, Morgan Scaly. Chris Ash being a guy who coached alongside Tom Herman at Ohio State, and before that coached as a defensive coordinator for Wisconsin. And Morgan Scaly currently leading Utah's defense, which is very, very solid. So
yeah, Van Fillinger couldn't wait to be a part of it.
Right. And San Diego State's Zach Arnett as well is another guy who the Longhorns are looking at. And his defense is one of the best in the nation. However, I like going with a more P5 guy, a guy who has already shown that they can do it at this level. I do like the idea of going after a guy like John Heacock just to throw you, see what he thinks about coming to Texas. He probably won't, but it seems like right now those four names are the names that Texas will be trying to persuade to pick up the reins for the defensive coordinator position at Texas.
All right, so let's go through that. You mentioned Kevin Steele at Auburn. I can't see that one happening. Wow, there's a lateral move for him. He's got the Auburn defense playing well. He's beating Texas for recruits like Chris Thompson in Texas, so I don't know about that one. Who was the other guy? Jimmy Lake at Washington. That's another guy, another situation where, you know, he's been there for a minute. I think he's got a good thing going. I think, you know, he's a guy that the next step is being a head coach. It's not taking a lateral move to another P5 in Washington. I'm not saying Washington is the University of Texas, but I mean, it's not that far under. But Scaly is a guy, I looked up, did a little bit of research on him. He's a Utah lifer. He grew up in Salt Lake City. All he knows is the University of Utah. At the same time, though, that was the same situation for Brian Harsin when Texas got him away from right. Boise State for that year. I think that would be a little bit of a tough pull, especially with them having as good of a year as they have. And why make a lateral move? The next step you think would be up.
At this point, it's a move down.
And then you're going to facing tougher offenses. You're going to the Big 12. Like, right. But with Ash, that one makes a lot of sense. You know, he was an analyst. He's been here hanging around for the past few months. Obviously, he can't, you know, he's here to help, but, it's Todd Orlando's defense. Todd Orlando's going to do what he wants to do regardless of whatever. You know, input is given by anybody, especially any analyst that's just been brought on. But like you said, he and Herman go back to their Ohio State days, which I don't know how I feel about, you know, in my eyes, and I'm sure some other people's eyes, you know, fans, folks on the message board, it looks a little bit like a comfort hire, which many folks felt, you know, guys like Tim Beck were, Derek Wareheim were. You know, I know you mentioned he was at Wisconsin and did well at Wisconsin. Let's not leave out he was at Rutgers, and I think Rutgers went something like 3-26, you know, over his tenure
there. Everybody sucks at Rutgers. Everybody sucks at Rutgers.
Yeah, but you know, hey, three wins in 3 years is a little bit of a red flag. But I've got to educate myself more on Chris Ash. But as of right now, of all the names that have been mentioned, he by far, in my mind, seems the most realistic, and it makes the most sense.
Right. I do think that Texas does have a shot with Jimmy Lake from Washington. We'll see. If not him, Zach Arnett or Chris Ash would be...
Arnett. Okay. And you know, I've got to educate myself on Arnett. But now it wouldn't be a lateral move for him going from San Diego State. The next step, him going from a place like San Diego State and then replicating, duplicating that success at a place like Texas. We've seen that success at a coordinator position, especially defensive coordinator at Texas, will lead to a big time job. So Arnett does make sense. I'll put him second behind Chris Ash right now as far as the names that we've heard and discussed so far.
Again, I would like a guy, if I'm a Longhorn fan or if I'm Tom Herman, a guy who I've seen have success at the Power 5 level rather than having to rely on taking a guy from the Group of 5 level and hoping that he can take that talent.
Agreed.
And make something with it at Texas when I'm in a crucial year.
I mean, I agree with you on that. So what do you think is going to happen now? They've got rid of two wide receiver coaches. We know that. We don't know. They haven't said who's going to do what now. But it makes sense in the interim for a guy that they brought on as an analyst this year that was just coaching wide receivers this past year at Kansas State. That's Andre Coleman. It would make sense for him to step in the interim since he's already on staff to handle the wide receivers. That could be a bit of an audition for him. I don't know if you had another name to add, but another guy that's has a history as a really good position coach and, most importantly, in my opinion, a great recruiter. What about a guy like David Beatty? A guy that was around. I believe he was at Kansas when I was coming out. I talked to him a few times. I think he went to A&M after that and then became the head coach at Kansas. You know, he's out there to be had. Andre Coleman makes sense. He's going to get a chance to impress. And then I think if Texas wants to go in another direction, a guy like David Beatty makes a lot of sense if he's not able to get a coordinator job somewhere. And who knows? Texas just got rid of two guys at receiver. That kind of opens up another spot because you don't have to have two wide receivers coaches. I know there are some places that have an inside coach, outside coach. Personally, I don't think it's necessary. I think you would rather have one coach, those receivers hearing one voice. So that would open up another position. But you have anything to add on the wide receivers, Will?
Yeah, I think we can wait on the wide receivers. I think that the Longhorns might be putting together a list, but it will probably be clearer once we understand who is the offensive coordinator coming in for the Longhorns. And they'll want to get a guy at the wide receiver position, likely something that happens in the offseason. But really, I mean, we got to talk about what's happening with Drew Maringer and Corby Meekins and what happened there, because that tenure was rough for the Longhorns wide receiver core. Drew Maringer, ever since he was his first year at Texas, it's kind of been up and down. He did well in recruiting when it came to the big surge that Tom Herman had in his first year. However, there were a lot of different issues during his time at Texas where he missed on guys he should not have or had bad evaluations, or like not going after Jalen Waddle, things like the poor scouting of Garrett Wilson. And these are just these surface level issues, things like missing on a Dalen Wright. Surface level issues as they are, there are some things that other wide receivers that they had shots at that they somehow or another messed up, on top of the miscommunications in that locker room. And boy, there were a lot of communication issues between Maringer and Meekins, between Meekins and the players, between Maringer and the players. It just created a lot of issues in that locker room that create a lot of unrest midway through the season.
Well, yeah, Maringer's, he's a young guy still. I don't even think he's 30 years old yet. But when you're dealing with young people, you know, that are, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, there's a certain line you don't cross, and then there's a certain player-coach relationship and respect that has to be there. When that line is crossed, when that gets challenged, you know, when you're in the wrong, you have to be able to look in the mirror, you know, and humble yourself. I think of an inability of being able to do that led to more problems, and it had a little bit of a snowball effect. There have been times where, you wonder what the heck were Texas wide receivers out there doing. I believe Maringer is up there in the box. Okay. So he's not even down there with the kids, But the coach that they did have down there was Coach Meekins. Meekins is more of a, you know, he's a guy that he's more of a trenches guy. You know, that's who he was at Spring Westfield. Texas kind of moved him out of there. They kind of moved him to their receiver spot just to find a spot for him when they brought in Herb Hand and all that other, all the other stuff happened. And what happens is, yeah, you get into crunch time and those bullets are flying and, you know, those guys are looking for help. You know, they're coming to their coach asking questions. Well, that's not Mr. Meekins' background, so he can't really help those guys. So then when they go from Meekins and then get in touch with Maringer, you know, he's wondering what the heck's going on. So then when you add in that lack of respect with the lack of knowledge on the other coach's part, you add that together and you got you a heck of a combination there. And it can lead to some guys being upset. It can lead to some confusion. It can lead to some issues that could linger. From what we've been talking about, we've been hinting at for a long time. If no changes were made in that room today, tomorrow, on Monday, there would have been you might have seen the University of Texas Austin on the news with a full out riot. So they had to make something happen there.
Pitchforks and torches and everything.
Yeah. So that should calm a little bit of the transfer rumors coming out of there. And wide receiver, man, I'm telling you, that's not hard to find a solid coach that can get along with his players, man. And I think you'll just see those guys improve just from having a better relationship with the guy that they're working with. So yeah, that had to be done. Wish that guy the best, and you know, it'll all work out. But everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, I don't think these guys are bad coaches. I think these are guys who, especially, you know, with Maringer, there were communication issues, but again, he's what, 30 years old? He's a super young guy.
He's young. And he's had a lot of really, really big time titles at a very early age. You know, yeah, he's growing just like those players are still growing, man.
Right. So it's going to be interesting to see where Texas goes in the wide receiver room. I would assume there are probably going to be a lot more coaching changes and staff changes made over the offseason, if not by Tom Herman, by his coordinators.
Also, what we got to keep in mind, again, he's got that spot open now because you don't have that extra receivers coach. So
defense, another defensive
coach. Be a change. Yeah, it has to be defense. And I was thinking whatever DC he brings in, he's probably going to handle the linebackers more than likely. I'm thinking that other spot will go to the defensive line. Oscar Giles will go back to being a defensive ends coach, and whoever they bring in to be a defensive tackles coach. And when I was at Texas, that guy was Bo Davis. I don't know. Bo Davis was a heck of a recruiter. He was able to get Toshiro Davis out of Louisiana when guys don't leave, you know, the state of Louisiana. I think another D-line coach, that could be something to keep an eye on. I don't think you need another receivers, but that is – it could that
potentially cornerbacks.
That spot could go to a recruiter. Two cornerbacks coaches?
Nah. No. I'm talking about a new cornerback coach.
A new cornerback coach. That's tough, man. Jason Washington all he did at Houston was put guys in the league, you know? I think that's just some growing pains, man. I don't know. Well, it's going to depend on who they bring in a defensive coordinator, you know? Yeah. Same thing on the OC, and I wonder how it affect, you know, a guy like Herb Hand.
Well, talking about this and putting guys in the league and recruiting, what do you think is going to happen in the interim in recruiting? We have National Signing Day coming up in a little over 2 weeks now. There are some major guys who are going to be signing. It's going to be a guy like Bijan Robinson who is signing. Quentin Jackson, there's going to be Quentin Johnston and Vernon Broughton, all of these guys signing. There are a few guys who I don't think we need to worry about, like Vernon Broughton. I don't think we should worry about him or Prince Dorba, but John Robinson, there have been reports circulating that potentially he's looking at USC. DeQuindon Jackson is another guy who is hard to read, and I've heard talk of, you know, maybe he's looking around. Quentin Johnston losing his wide receiver coach. What are your thoughts on what's going on and what could happen going up to National Signing Day? Is there a reason to keep an eye on a few kids, and who?
Well, let's start with the receivers. Quentin Johnston is a unique kid. He committed, you know, more for the program. I don't think he's going to be affected by the receiver coaches being let go. Same thing with Troy Marier, who actually he voiced his where he stood on Twitter earlier today. He said he's solid with Texas. Nothing's changed. He's excited to get going in the spring. So both of those guys are in. And then Dejon Harrison was more of a group effort, you know, by the staff. That was the most recent addition. So I don't think it's going to affect him at all. As far as Bijan Robinson, the running backs, I was under the impression, just reading everything he says, is, you know, he was the guys, the most important guys for him were Coach Herman and Coach Stan Drayton. If Texas were to land Graham Harrell, I would think that would go a long ways towards ending that little USC threat with Robinson, since that's supposedly the team that he's been flirting with. In my mind, I kind of, in the back of my head, kind of expect to lose him. And I'm just hoping that I'm pleasantly surprised and he ends up being a part of the class. With a guy like Jaquindon Jackson, Samples is gone. I don't know if you remember his commitment video. There was a guy on the end at the end of the video saying he'd be next. That guy never came. We never found out who that was. That whole Duncanville pipeline, it doesn't really exist anymore. They don't owe Texas anything right now. We didn't even mention that. Maybe Rashad Samples could be brought back in some type of role, in that assistant role in the future.
That could be. That could be a thing.
But, he doesn't owe Texas anything, you know. So with SMU sniffing around, you know, trying to get guys to stay home, Oklahoma sniffing around, I could see something. I could see Jaquindon Jackson popping up on somebody's campus. It wouldn't surprise me. Now, I don't think a guy like Hudson Carr is going anywhere, anything to worry about there. Ty Jordan, none of the offensive linemen. But Robinson, Jackson, I think those are guys to keep an eye on. And we saw Van Fillinger, who initially, you know, said, you know, he wasn't, if something happened, change was made, he had to step back and just reevaluate things. Well, he immediately committed as soon as that came out, which led me to believe that Texas was going to lose him eventually anyway, man. It didn't make sense for me, honestly, with the season that Utah's having, seeing how they're playing, him being from there. It didn't really make sense for me to choose Texas over Utah, honestly, in the first place.
And we at TFB have kind of been saying, or Super K has been really been saying, hey, this thing is going to be probably breaking down, and he's looking elsewhere. That got poo-pooed. And then it just happened. This thing's kind of been over between Texas and Van Fillinger since Kansas State, maybe Kansas, Oklahoma, even that far back. But
he was just waiting for the right time.
Exactly.
But speaking about the defensive line recruiting, though, maybe this helps getting back in with a guy like Princely. Maybe it helps, you know, with a guy like Alfred Collins, who I've been saying all along I never thought was a lock for Texas, but. You know, there are reports coming out from other places that Texas may be running third in that race behind Baylor and Oklahoma. Maybe a new defensive coordinator. Maybe that helps. I can't see losing Todd Orlando hurting with any defensive line recruiting, as weird as that sounds.
Oh, no, not at all.
I don't think anybody was excited about being a part of his scheme. I think the damage, honestly, is going to be minimal. You know, you don't have to worry about a guy like Keaton Crawford going anywhere. Xavier Offer will be on campus in January. Just the guys, Bijan Robinson, Jaquindon Jackson. I just think, those you're highly rated, your top skill guys, those guys that everybody wants. I think those are going to be the guys you have to sweat and worry about.
Yeah. There are definitely going to be some guys who are circled back on, like Bijan Robinson, like Jaquindon Jackson, maybe even Vernon Broughton. I'm pretty confident Vernon Broughton stays, but there are going to be some guys who are circled back on and given, you know, the pitch where, hey, look at all of this chaos that's happening at Texas. Look at all the instability at Texas. Do you really want to be a part of that? And that's a fair question. And it's going to have these guys have to think about it. But, at the end of the day, I'm not all of that concerned in losing most of these guys, if any.
All right. I agree. And again, I personally, I expect the worst, and I'll be pleasantly surprised when it doesn't come to pass. You know, that way I don't get disappointed. You know, I'm ready for what could happen. Right. And then also thinking about how it may affect the 2021 class, TFB's our own CJ Vogel was able to get in touch with Derek Harris. Derek Harris says he's solid. We got a message out to the staff at Den Ryan. I'm trying to get in touch with, you know, see how things, if it moves the needle at all for a guy like Jatavion Sanders or Billy Bowman.
I'd be surprised if it did.
No, I think the ripples of that losing Fillinger, I think the impact's going to be minimal. I do.
Yeah. And that's actually kind of weird that that's the case. Losing all of these coaches and you're not going to lose that many commitments.
Well, it's almost like the kids kind of agree.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree with that. So let's go ahead and switch topics here and kind of go back into something probably Longhorn fans, I don't know if they really want to hear about it, but let's talk about the Texas Tech game. It seems like it was forever ago after everything that has happened over the past 2 days. It's just, it's something that seemed like, you know, and also Thanksgiving. It seemed like something that's nothing to be too excited about. Something that was expected and then it happened. What are your general thoughts on this game, on the Texas Tech game?
Well, clearly, you know, when Texas went down 14-0, you're seeing all the tweets. Folks are ready. I promise you'd have been hearing a whole lot about it had Texas not come back and won that game. I thought you saw a team that came out there sleepwalking, maybe feeling a little bit sorry for themselves to start the game. But then you had some guys make a couple plays. I thought that catch Malcolm Ellis made on that sideline on 2nd and 20, might have been 2nd and 25, went for like 36 yards. That was Colin Johnson. That was a heck of a catch. Okay, and the way Roschon Johnson was out there running, to have a guy like Marcus Washington catch a ball, break a few tackles, and pick up 15, I thought that got the team going. And once Texas got going, it was a thing of beauty. They ended up outscoring Texas Tech with something like, was it 49-10 the remaining three quarters of that game? We haven't seen Texas put it on somebody like that all year. I was pleasantly surprised. Now, that wasn't a Tech team at full strength. Now, they were missing their best player on defense. But no, the Longhorns came out and handled business. I thought it was definitely a positive because you got to see contributions from guys that you hope and expect to be a big part of what you're doing next year, making plays, especially on offense. And then you got a lot coming back defensively.
The thing about that, though, is it's expected. Against a team like Texas Tech, at the point where Texas Tech is right now, which was a 4-7 team with a defense that was very susceptible, that's something that you need to do. That's something that is expected. With a team like you have with Sam Ellinger, the wide receiver talent you have, the offensive line talent you have, the defensive talent you have, that is something that is expected against a team like Texas Tech.
I just feel like that attitude of, oh, that's just that's not. Texas was 6-5 coming into that game. And then they were down 14-0 at home. I feel like this is something, of course, it's not, you know, you're not storming the field. Oh my God. But I mean, it was a quality, thorough butt kicking after that slow start. And I just saw a lot of positive coming from this thing. And I think we gotta be careful with the, you know, this is what they're supposed to do. All this talent. Texas clearly isn't that much more talented than everybody else because they're in a dogfight every week.
Right. I also think that comes more down to coaching than it does the talent. I think that's just, I don't think that's a very, you know, hot take. But
I thought it was a great win. They put up 49 points and on the day after Thanksgiving when it was expected to be a little bit, it had all the makings and potentials of being a letdown, especially with that start.
Right. And the players bowed up for the seniors and they played for each other. And I think that is a huge compliment to these players. Those guys did not quit on themselves. They didn't quit on their teammates. The game seems like it doesn't matter because with all the coaching changes made afterwards, you really can't talk about, hey, you know, maybe Texas needs to get better in this part of the game or in that part of the game going forward because, one, we're at the end of the season, aside for the bowl game, and two, the coaches are gone, most of them. What you're going to have to look at is the play of the players and how they reacted. And I still think that you're seeing, hey, the guys that this staff recruited are quality. You have a quality quarterback. I mean, Sam Ellinger played lights out. Your running backs and Roschon Johnson, maybe if he stays at running back, you have Jordan Whittington coming back, potentially Bijan Robinson. And let's not forget, Keyonte Ingram, even though he went down early in the game, looked pretty good until his ankle messed up. The cornerback play out there with guys like Kenyatta Watson, Deshaun Jameson, and Jalen Green, and Kobe Boyce, it's just, you had so much depth back there. Linebackers played well. Defensive line played well. Everybody played well against a team where, you know, they should have played well. And that's a huge, huge positive for these players.
Yeah, for sure. I just feel like, I don't know, some of that credit has to go to the coaches. It can't just always be the players play great. Oh, it's their talent. Or then when they play bad, it's the coaches too. I don't know.
The thing
is
the coaches took advantage of Texas Tech's inability to stop the deep ball. And that really opened things up. And that's something they couldn't do against Iowa State, something they couldn't do against Baylor, something they really couldn't do against other teams because, the wide receivers just couldn't get open down the field. And Texas's offensive line couldn't give them enough time. You know, there wasn't enough creativity to build a play like that. Finally, they were just able to throw it up against these guys and come down with the ball. And I think that's a lot on Texas Tech's defense. It was one of their main weaknesses. If you scout that team or just watch a game from this past season, that's something that happens. That's what they do. So that really did open up that game for the offense. The defensive side, I do think, got a lot better. And I do think that the coaches probably do deserve credit there. But on the offensive side, I do think that was mainly Texas Tech being bad.
Yeah, it was a good performance. There's definitely a big difference tackling between Texas Tech and Baylor. It's like night and day. Night and day. But Tech was also missing their best player, who's a Buckeyes finalist, in the middle. So Texas caught a break there. But like you said, they did what they were supposed to do. They took care of business. So now we're trying to figure out where they're going to play in a few weeks and who.
Right. Now that we've talked about Texas Tech, let's get back to some of the coaching changes and bring on a friend of ours, Zach Barnett, the college football writer for Football Scoop. How are you doing, Zach?
Doing well. Good to be here. I'm actually a fan of you guys' work and a paying subscriber, so it's good to be here.
Well, it's good to hear. That's really good to hear. I was unaware. I was unaware that you were subscribed to TFB, but appreciate it. So let's go ahead and dive into this because it has been an interesting Thanksgiving Day weekend where Tom Herman decides to play the major trump card and take all of his staff basically and flip it. What are your thoughts on the major moves made by Tom Herman yesterday? And do you agree with making such a major change so fast?
Yeah, I mean, I think, oddly, the challenge for Tom Herman is that the season went so poorly and the teams underperformed so much that really you could make an argument for all 10 of his assistant coaches to be replaced. But obviously you can't replace all 10. Otherwise you're basically arguing for your own firing. So you have to pick and choose, you know, which ones, who's going to stay, who's going to go. So, the four that we saw in the first wave, if I had to pick four, that's probably who would have gone with. And then obviously, you know, you need guys to finish out this recruiting class, to coach the upcoming bowl game. And so I fully expect we'll see a second wave come, you know, early next month, once the bowl game and recruiting is done and who those, you know, obviously it remains to be seen who those changes are, but the new coordinators I expect will have a large say in who stays and who goes from there.
Right. That's what I was thinking. We talked about this earlier, the fact that they pretty much are making changes with the entire staff just because they took care of the coordinators. So it's probably going to be a full clean slate of new guys in there. But since you focus on so many programs all at once, you get a pretty big national perspective of what's going on. And so I want to know, what is the national perspective when it comes to the move that Tom Herman made yesterday? What do people think about Texas at this point?
Well, I'll say within the industry, one good thing about having a brand like Texas is if you're a head coach and you get in this profession and you hear that Texas is interested in talking to you, then it's a sign to you that you've done something right in your job and that you're on the right track. So I think they're going to be well positioned to build the 2.0 staff under Tom Herman, you know, once that ball starts moving, which, you know, it already is moving. But I think they're starting, you know, from ahead, being that they are Texas.
So the two guys that Tom Herman is probably thinking about going after for his offensive coordinator job, as we reported on TFB, is Joe Brady and Graham Harrell. Now that seems to be pretty common knowledge at this point. But you seem pretty confident that Texas's best chances right now are with Graham Harrell and not Joe Brady. Why is that?
I think the Brady thing is real simple. Obviously, LSU, you know, is not going to let him get away easily. They pay, you know, they gave Dave Aranda a $10 million contract. And then, you know, obviously they've seen the transformational aspect that the Brady hire has been. So they're not just going to let him walk. But at the same time, Joe Brady's, what, 30 years old and was relatively obscure, you know, second-level assistant in the NFL this time a year ago. And Ed Orgeron, you know, changed the trajectory of his life forever. So I think that'd be really tough for him to say, hey, Ed, thanks for everything you've done for me, but I'm peacing out. See you later. And, oh, by the way, I'll be back in Tiger Stadium next September as an opponent. You know, he's a guy that – he's not a guy that really, I don't think, seeks the spotlight, you know. From day one, he's been very complimentary, and he hasn't at all seemed bothered that he's sharing the load with Steven Spinger and calling plays. So I think he's going to be personally loyal to Ed, while at the same time, you know, he's going to become a very rich 30-year-old by staying at LSU. So, you know, I think any time spent on that would be wasted time, whereas, you know, in talking with people close to Graham Harrell, I think he would be interested in returning home, returning to the motherland, you know, whether or not Clay Helton is retained at USC in 2020.
Is that just because he wants to come home, or is it because of what's going on at USC in this time? Is it because of Texas? Is he wary of another, basically, coaching for his job once again?
You know, I think in his scenario, you know, whether you're at USC or at Texas, you have to be kind of aware that either way you're going to be coaching for your job. And, you know, he's already bet on himself because he knew the score when he took the USC job last January. And, you know, that bet's paid off because, you know, the only way that Helton is even, you know, without his work, you know, transforming their offense, then there's no way Helton is even close to keeping his job. So, you know, I think it would be kind of similar no matter if he's in Austin or L.A., but, you know, he's obviously a Texas guy, you know, played quarterback at Ennis High School before he's at Texas Tech. So I think the chance to be back home, back closer to family, while at the same time, you know, being the offensive coordinator of the Texas Longhorns, even for a guy that is a Red Raider, I think that's just an attractive place in life for him to be.
Yeah, it is a pretty controversial hire, being as he is one of the guys who gave Longhorn fans so much pain. I was thinking about it
a little bit earlier. It would be about, like, kind of like if Alabama in a few years hired Chris Davis to be their special teams coordinator.
That's a little counterintuitive, something you never thought. Hey, you know, when you're watching it at that point, you're like, hey, maybe this guy's going to work for us one day. Maybe save the program. But speaking of that, Tom Herman is also trying to figure out what to do with the defensive side of the ball. Right now, there are a lot of different names out there, and Chris Ash being one of the main ones. First off, do you think that's a good idea to go, you know, in your network for Tom Herman with Chris Ash?
You know, you can make the argument either way, and, you know, there is that element of it that if you do hire Chris Ash, it's going to be it was just a comfort hire. But at the same time, you know, when you're a foxhole, you know, you want to be in that foxhole with people that you know. So, well, and then obviously Chris Ash is a very capable defensive coordinator who, you know, did really good things at Ohio State and Wisconsin. So, you know, if I'm a fan, I'm fine with it. If Tom Herman hires Chris Ash, and at the same time, you know, I think Morgan Scally is a guy that's going to get a look. There's rumor out there that Utah is going to make him head coach in waiting, but, you know, I can say that's just a rumor. I don't think that's actually going to happen. Well, but he could end up being working his way into the UNLV mix, because I know they're looking to go with a coordinator type hire for that job. So that's something to keep an eye on. And then another guy that I think I'd have to look at would be Jimmy Lake at Washington. The way that they've shut down Mike Leach's air raid, you know, just really every single year, you know, they've really, you know, found the answers to the test every time they play Mike Leach's attack. And obviously, you know, I don't have to tell you how influential the air raid is every single Saturday in the Big 12.
Right. So if you had your choice of guy, if you had free reign to go after and hire anybody within reason, who would be your first call to go out to a defensive coordinator you know, it, whether it's on the list of guys that's out there or off of it?
Since we're talking, and to make it a fun answer, I really love to see what type of number it would take to pry Alex Grinch away from Oklahoma, because I think he's a really good coach. And then at the same time, if you could improve yourself while severely weakening your rival, then that would be a great fantasy land hire to make.
See, my fantasy land hire is John Heacock.
Yeah, that would be another one, but it doesn't quite pack the same punch as Grinch would. But I'm a big fan of Heacock as well.
I think either one would be a pretty fun hire. I think trying to money whip Alex Grinch, oh boy, well, that'd be fun. But this has been Zach Barnett, the college football writer for Football Scoop. Zach, where can we find you and your stuff?
I'm going to be posting day and night at footballscoop.com, really for the next 2 months. And then on Twitter at Zach, @Zach_Barnett.
And last question. Best place to get chicken nuggets?
Best place to get chicken nuggets.
Because you're the nugget king.
You know, if I get a chance, I really can't pass up Chicken Express. They're really more of a strips place than nuggets. But if I'm on my own and I don't have to appease anybody else, then I'm going to Chicken Express.
Well, I've yet to be the find a Chicken Express around Austin. Maybe I'm just not looking hard enough.
They're very common. Whenever you're up north in the state, out in the hinterlands up north, then you'll find a Chicken Express and you'll be very happy that you did.
Is that a Chicken Express next to the Check Stop in West?
I think it very well could be. I've driven past it enough to that I should know it by heart, but I don't. But the West is very much the type of place that a Chicken Express would be.
Well, everybody, this has been Zach Barnett. Zach, thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Again, thanks to Zach for coming on. He's a great dude. Went to Texas, knows Texas, but also is just a great national guy to follow on Twitter.
Thanks, Zach.
But on that note, we're going to end it off there. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man, DT, where can we find you?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter as well. DTurl, that's 2Rs, 2Ls, 05. I will sit here and argue with you about Todd Orlando for the rest of the week. Come see me.
Come see me in my office.
Yeah, I got time.
So you guys can find us and our other notes on thefootballbrainiacs.com. That's texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. And now is the time to join with all the changes that are going to be happening, all the recruiting that is going to be happening. There's no better time to join than now. You guys can also find us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. So Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. But on that note, we're going to leave you off here. Thank y'all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.